You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
On an island in the northwest of Botswana's Okavango Delta, Derek and Beverly Joubert tracked a group of lions, part of what is called its Saro Pride. In their new documentary, The Last Lions, the award-winning filmmakers focus on a lioness of that pride named Madi Tao as she fights to protect her cubs from various enemies, including other packs of lions and aggressive buffalo. And if that isn't enough, the narration by Jeremy Irons adds to the drama. The movie opens today at the Paris and Angelica Theaters, and I'm very pleased that it brings Derek and Beverly Joubert to our show. Hello.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you.
So where did those names come from, the Saro tribe and Madi Tao, the name of the lioness?
From ether. No, they're Setswana names because all of this is shot in Botswana, and we're Botswana citizens living there. And so it just made more sense generally to adopt the names of the place, and it felt right for them.
But you gave them those names?
Well, either we gave them the names or people nearby, guides coming through, gave them those names. So it's all organic.
You did most of the filming for this in an area named Duba Island. Where is Duba Island located, and how big is it?
Duba Island is in the Okavango Delta, and this is in Botswana, and it truly is.
The delta to go into what?
Well, it's an inland delta.
That's actually right.
That's a rare kind of thing, isn't it? Most deltas go into oceans.
Yeah, exactly.
Absolutely. And then the area is about, what is it,
100 square miles, this island, surrounded by delta water. But it really is paradise, just an absolute paradise.
Do people live there?
No, just us.
Uh-huh. Nobody can live there because in the winter months, the high floods come in and then three quarters of the island is really underwater. And that's really what's so unique about this place. The lions had to adapt to survive. The buffalo were already moving through and constantly moving through water, but lions normally detest water. And these lions adapted to follow the buffalo.
And so only the lions in this area swim? Big cats will swim if they have to, but I know from my own experience with house cats, they really don't like being immersed in water.
No cats enjoy water, actually. Every now and again, you see images of tigers in India where they actually can't get away from it. But African cats, lions in particular, don't like water. These lions have adapted to it and actually use it as a tactic to hunt the buffalo.
Well, we think of lions as the kings of the jungle. But what enemies do they have and how vulnerable are they?
They really have man. The super predator is man, and we are actually exterminating them at a rapid rate. 50 years ago, there were 450,000 lions, and now today there's only 20,000.
And it's simply humans killing them off? Killing them off for what reason?
Human-animal conflict. So there's a lot of poaching going on, a lot of poaching for the bone trade being sold into the east. Tiger bone is disappearing rapidly, and as tigers disappear, go below 3,000, and now they've turned to lion bone.
And do they supposedly have magical powers?
Well, supposedly, but no more magical powers than any other mythic remedy. Certainly it doesn't make you any more virile, and that's what it's really used for. But now, there's a lot of hunting as well that we have to
How can you even count a lion population?
The sad thing is the fewer and fewer they are, the easier they become to count. So, but this number actually is drawn down from all lion scientists up and down through Africa, giving their numbers in, and it's a fairly accurate number.
Mm-hmm. Well, are these lions similar to the lions in other parts of Africa?
The Duba lions are actually the same species, but very, very different. In fact, we almost feel like these lions are evolving in so many ways because they've had to adapt to the water. And so looking at them, their pectoral muscles are much larger, and their necks are really swollen, this huge muscle at the back of the neck. These lions are eating buffalo almost every second or third day, so they're getting a huge amount of protein as well. But their hunting behavior is very interesting, and they are specializing on buffalo, whereas normally lions, are open to taking any prey, but these are pretty much only taking buffalo.
Because there are no gazelles there or some of the other animals that they normally feast on.
Yeah, they've sort of almost become like these these sheepdogs moving behind the buffalo all the time, but they're moving through the water all the time, so developing these huge muscles.
Is this area considered a reserve for the lions that survive?
Well, it is. It's a private concession owned by the community that live nearby. And it is one of the sections in Botswana outside of national parks that make up between 30 and 40% of the country that is under wildlife.
Now, you begin, you actually tell a story here, and you begin with Madita losing her mate. Right. Are lions monogamous?
Well, they're not. Usually what the system is that you have two or three males sometimes with the pride of lions. And the reason that we picked this particular individual for this story is that she was unusual when we found her. She was an individual lioness, and that already lent us to think that she might have an interesting story, and with a single mate. I think that it was the beginning of a pride.
Well, Jeremy Irons says she failed as a mother. How had she failed as a mother?
Well, early on, she lost one of her cubs, and that, for the lioness, what we were trying to portray there is to bring the parallel of what is happening on a daily basis to a female, you know, a human female.
That's right. And I think that Maritao means protector of lions, and protector of lions in that world is as a mother, as a powerful mother. And when she started losing cubs, she was failing even her name, actually, in many ways.
But she wasn't just vulnerable to humans. She's also vulnerable to other lions, isn't she? Is because she is alone, is she seen as
yes.
possible prey?
Yeah, and a target. You know, the story arc of this film is a single lioness, a single mother in many ways, going through life with all these amazing obstacles where everything's out to get her, and yet she survives. And it is a story of hope and survival.
My guests are the latest film is The Last Lions, which opens today at the Paris and Angelica Theaters. Derek and Beverly Joubert, who've made how many films together? 22, 23?
Yes, around about 22. And then we've always brought out either a companion book, which there is with The Last Lions as well.
Do you think audience members are moved to think more seriously about conservation efforts when they actually see these lions in their natural habitat, as opposed to reading a book or a magazine article?
Yeah, very much so. We're finding that audiences go in not quite knowing what to expect, but immediately get captivated by the individual personality and the story, the intimate story of these lions. And then a film like this completely wins the hearts and minds of those people. And then the great thing is they come out of that film and then they really want to do something about it.
Well, it has been estimated that over 1 billion viewers have seen your 1998 film, Eternal Enemies, which is about the fight for survival between lions and hyenas. That's over the years, I'm assuming.
Yes.
Beverly, for this movie, what was a normal day of filming like? You have to get up real early?
Very early. And, of course, we obviously have to be living on the island. So we're living under canvas. And we would leave
around in a tent.
Yeah, we are in a tent. And we would leave about 4 in the morning. The first obstacle we had to confront was a major river that we'd have to cross. And crossing that was interesting. I mean, we would get wet. We don't have any doors, no windshield. And so as we're crossing, the water flows in and often, you know, goes way over our seats. But once we get onto the other side, the challenge is finding our subjects. And it's really very, very difficult, even though the island is only 100 square miles, to find a buffalo herd of 1,200 strong or the lionesses is quite a challenge. So Derek would sit and he would look for tracks, and I would sit on top of the roof and I'd look for the white egrets and look for the buffalo.
But once you found the buffalo, you found the lions.
Once we found the buffalo, we would then circle, and then we would constantly look under and around all the bushes until we found the lions.
It does help to have telephoto lenses, I imagine.
It helps to have these long lenses, but for us, the sweet spot of filming is about 20 or 30 paces away, because that's where they look best and where we can get the background. And there are a whole lot of technical advantages to being within that range.
Now, you mentioned earlier, Beverly, that over the past 50 years, the lion population in this area has gone from a little less than a half million to 20,000, you said, yeah. something like that?
That's right.
What about the buffalo?
Well, the buffalo are also on a decline. In fact, almost every species in Africa is on a decline, but they're not as severe as the predators right now. And I think what we have to worry about is by taking the top predators out of the system, the balance of the environment completely changes and actually collapses.
One scene in particular shows Ma Di Tao trying to corner a baby buffalo to bring it back to her cubs. What happens?
Well, it's interesting there because at that moment, and you get a lot of these things going on throughout nature where one mother is defending fiercely her young while Ma Di Tao, the predator, is trying her best to kill that young so that she can feed her cubs. So in many ways, this is probably the pinnacle of that ancient dance in Africa that plays itself out over and over again.
And then Ma Di Tao finds herself in a similar situation on the other side of it when her cubs are under attack.
Exactly, exactly. And I think that what's great for us is to see audiences now responding to the storyline and understanding that these harsh things sometimes happen. So this isn't a – The Last Lines is not a sort of soft soaping of the story. It's real. This is what it is.
A couple of years ago, you launched the Big Cats Initiative. What's the purpose of that program?
Well, the Big Cat Initiative is really an emergency intervention to look at where we are right now and to take action and to stop the decline. And we feel like we've really only got 5 years to be able to stop that decline. And then
are they an endangered species?
They are not an endangered species on CITES yet. We would like to have CITES put them on endangered species so people can't trade in their skins and in the trophies.
Any animal that's got 20,000 individuals left is definitely an endangered species.
And then there's another problem, inbreeding, isn't there? When it gets small enough, there have been a number of big cats that actually have suffered as a result of the fact that there isn't all – you know, there isn't that much of a choice when you're mating.
Exactly. And one of the things that we know from the theory of island biogeography is that the smaller these isolated islands, the more likely we are to see inbreeding and the more rapid the extinction rate within those islands. So this is a big problem, and this is the reason we did the film.
Didn't some of your work inspire the animated Disney film The Lion King?
This is true.
You would have thought that that would have inspired people to think more about conservation.
Well, maybe it has.
Yeah. Well, at least we've got the younger generation, you know, appreciating and loving lions. But what happened is they saw two of our documentaries that we had done with National Geographic, and they wanted the animators to be able to get the power of the story and obviously the get the animation to work as best as possible through watching two of our films. And one was actually Eternal Enemies.
And I think the extension of that is that today we're so used to seeing these animals in animated form. And as a result, they're
cute little things.
Yeah, and they're cute and they're prolific. And in some ways, that's great because then we fall in love with them. But in some ways, then it gives a false impression that they're everywhere and accessible. And that's not the case anymore.
You've also been named Explorers in Residence for National Geographic. What does that mean?
Good question. Who knows what that means? Explorers in Residence, there are about 13 of us at National Geographic. And it's a great honor. It's almost an ambassadorial role for us. But the great thing about this is that once a year, these explorers come in from everywhere, from Afghanistan, from Alaska, from the middle of Africa, all get together and have a symposium, a sort of brains trust of National Geographic. But it's a very, very stimulating time.
There's a book, I assume, that will be released as a companion to this film?
Yes, there is. And the book is called The Last Lines as well.
Uh-huh. And does it complement it, or is it simply the text version?
It definitely complements it, but it also gives those behind stories that obviously we could never put into the feature form. And everybody's always fascinated about how did we manage to capture the certain scenes, and also what dangers happened to us. So that's really what the book's all about.
Are you tempted to go to some other areas in Africa where there are lions and see the similarities or the differences?
Very much so. Our next project, in fact, is we want to take our little airplane and fly up the whole of Africa and have a look at at where these last vestiges of lions are and compare them.
I wonder if these lions could interbreed with the other lions.
Well, that's the interesting thing. We're also going to be
taking... Because you say they are evolving.
Yeah. We're going to be taking DNA samples as well, and part of the function of that to see whether these animals are similar, dissimilar, uniquely, you know, and distinct. And this will inform us for breeding programs later on, perhaps.
Well, you've been documenting the lives of wild lions for 3 decades now. How much does it change?
Every day changes. Every single day changes. We go out and we start working with lions every morning, and we've got a sort of checklist in our heads of what we know about them. We virtually find out something new every day.
And then, of course, every environment changes. What we often do is try and spend 6 years in one area, and each environment is uniquely different because the lions have to adapt to that environment and to the animals around them.
Have you ever thought of doing a film about lions in the circus or lions in a zoo?
Oh, that no. would absolutely break our hearts.
But they are adapting as well, aren't they?
Not really. I think that genetically, lions in captivity, and look, there are 4,500 lions in South Africa alone that are there for the canned lion hunting industry. And that's a real problem because these are sort of genetically mishmashed together and they just cannon fodder, in essence. So it would be very tricky for us. And we're much more interested in saving the lions so that we can save the wild land, so that we can save the whole of the ecosystem.
In fact, in a way, the iconic species is the lion. And obviously, you know, if you can take the sexiest creature out there, at least you can draw attention to the whole environment and the wilderness.
Derek and Beverly Joubert's latest film, their 22nd, I think it is The Last Lions, and it opens today at the Paris and Angelica Theaters here in New York. There'll also be a book published by
National Geographic.
Thank you so much for being on our show.
Thank you very much.